There was a huge landing without any furniture, like an empty carpeted field. Erica stopped to allow her five-year-old self to relish the feeling of space. She let her arms float from her sides. There was an enormous painting of an eye on one wall, with a four-poster bed reflected in the pupil of the eye, nonsensical, illuminated by a single low-hanging light fitting, like an upside-down milk bottle. It was like a room in a gallery of modern art. How long would it take her mother to ruin a space like this with her crap? Erica walked down the hallway towards the murmur of voices in the end room. The carpet was so plush, she bounced along like an astronaut. Whoops! She swayed a little, and her shoulder brushed the wall. She should have asked me in private. It was Clementine, speaking quietly but perfectly clearly. Not with all four of us there. With cheese and crackers, for God's sake. That stingy little piece of cheese. It was so weird. Wasn't it weird? Erica froze. She was close enough to the room to see their shadows. She stood back against the hallway wall, away from the door. She probably thought it involved all four of us, said Sam. I guess, said Clementine. Do you want to do it? Said Sam. No, I don't want to do it. I mean, that's my first instinctive response. Just no, I don't want to do it. This sounds so awful, but I just hate the thought of it. It's almost repulsive to me. Oh, God, I don't mean that. I just really don't want to do it. Repulsive. Erica closed her eyes. No amount of therapy or long hot showers would ever get her clean enough. She was still that dirty, flea-bitten kid. Well, you don't have to do it, said Sam. It's just something they're asking you to consider. You don't need to get all worked up about it. But there's no one else in her life. There's only me. It's always only me. She hasn't got any other friends. It's like she always wants another piece of me. Clementine's voice rose. Shh, said Sam. They can't hear us. But Clementine lowered her voice again, and Erica had to strain to hear. I think I'd feel like it was my baby. I'd feel like they had my baby. What if it looked like Holly and Ruby? Well, that shouldn't worry you too much, seeing as you'd rather poke your eyes. That was a joke. Erica shouldn't have passed that on. I didn't actually mean... Clementine's voice rose again. Yes, I know. Sure. Look, let's just get through this thing and we'll talk about it when we get home. Daddy! Ruby's little voice piped up. Play again. Right now. Now, now, now. That's enough, Ruby. We need to go back downstairs, said Clementine. We need to change her. That's what we need to do, said Sam. Where's the nappy bag? It's downstairs, of course. It's not attached to my wrist. Geez, don't get snippy on me. I'll get it. Sam came out of the room and stopped short. Erica, he said. And it was almost funny the way he took a step back, his eyes wide with fear, as if she were an intruder. Chapter 25. Tiffany was searching through the bottom drawer of Dakota's chest of drawers for an Alana Hill white cardigan with a scattering of tiny white pearls on the shoulders, that suddenly seemed like exactly the right sort of thing for a private school mother to wear to a compulsory information morning. She was sure this was the cardigan she'd pulled from her bag and made Dakota wear when they'd gone to Vid's cousin's baby's christening a few weeks back, and it had suddenly got cold. It had hung around Dakota's wrists, but Dakota never cared much what she was wearing. Knowing Dakota, she'd come home and jammed it in one of her drawers. It probably needed cleaning, but Tiffany was obsessed with finding it, as if it were the only solution to a far more complex problem. She pulled out everything from the bottom drawer and placed it on the floor next to her. There was a book jammed right at the back of the drawer. She went to put it on the floor and saw that it was only half a book. The cover was missing. It had been torn in half. Almost every page had been scribbled upon in angry black marker, in some cases so violently there were holes through the paper. She sat back on her haunches, staring at it, breathing rapidly. The title at the top of the page said, The Hunger Games. Wasn't that the book that her sister Karen had told her was too grown up for Dakota? You've got to take responsibility for what she reads, Karen had said bossily. Don't you know how violent that book is? But Tiffany had believed she shouldn't censor Dakota's reading. It wasn't pornography, after all. It was a young adult book. Tiffany knew what the book was about. She'd watched the movie trailer on YouTube. And even fairy tales were violent. What about Hansel and Gretel? Dakota had always loved the most gruesome fairy tales. Had the book had such a profoundly terrible impact on Dakota that she'd felt the need to destroy it? It was like it had been brutally vandalized. Tiffany pulled more clothes out and found the remainder of the book. Dakota loved her books, and she always took such care of them. Her bookshelf was in beautiful order. She didn't even freaking well dog-ear pages. She used a bookmark. And now she was tearing up a book and hiding it? It didn't make sense. Reading was her greatest pleasure. Tiffany looked at the ceiling. Although, was Dakota reading as much as she once had? She had to read for homework, of course. And Dakota diligently sat down at her desk and did all her homework without ever being asked, without Tiffany having to monitor her at all. But what about reading for pleasure? When was the last time Tiffany had come across her reading in bed or on the window seat? She couldn't remember. Jeez Louise, had this book distressed her so much that she couldn't even read anymore? Tiffany's negligence was breathtaking. Terrible mother, terrible neighbour, terrible woman. Have you finished polishing those shoes yet, Vid? She called out. We don't want to leave late. The traffic will be bad in the rain. Tiffany shoved everything, including the book, back into the drawer. Obviously, she wouldn't say anything to Dakota now, not when they were just about to leave for the information morning. She put it out of her mind for later. Chapter 26. The Day of the Barbecue. Sam said, Erica! And Clementine clapped her hand over her mouth as if to grab back her words and then quickly dropped it as evidence of her guilt. Her stupidity and thoughtlessness were beyond belief. Oh, hi. Thanks, she said as Erica came into the room and handed her the nappy bag. How did you guess we needed that? Is Holly okay? As she babbled, she frantically rewound the conversation. What could Erica have overheard? Anything? All of it? Oh, God, not the part about being repulsed. It was her tone that was the worst. The tone of contempt. She kept talking, as if she could somehow conceal what she'd said with layers of new conversation. Dakota took her to see the dog kennel or something. She wants a puppy for her birthday. Don't you dare give her one, will you? Only joking, I know you wouldn't. Isn't this house amazing? I bet even the dog kennel is 5-star. From behind Erica, Sam widened his eyes and ran his finger across his throat. Tiffany wants us all to go outside to the cabana, said Erica. She sounded dry and cool as usual. Maybe she hadn't heard anything.
I'll go back down, check on Holly, said Sam. You right with Ruby?
Of course I'm right with Ruby, said Clementine.
He always did that when he left her with one or both of the girls, as if he needed to confirm that she would indeed remember to take care of her own children.
Where are you going to change her?
Erica looked around her. This was what rich people called a media room. There were leather couches facing the laughably gigantic screen on the wall. Sam had just about lost his mind with envy when he saw it.
Oh, God, said Clementine, I don't know. The floor, I guess?
She started laying out the change mat and wipes. Everything looks so expensive, doesn't it?
I'm stinky, said Ruby.
She tilted her head seductively, as if being stinky was something to be prized.
Yes, you are, said Clementine.
Wasn't Holly toilet trained by this age? Asked Erica, as Clementine changed Ruby.
We've been putting it off, admitted Clementine.
Normally, she would have been annoyed by the implied criticism in Erica's question, but now she was anxious to humbly admit her failure, as if that would somehow acquit her of the nasty things she'd said. My God, she'd complained about the size of the cheese.
Once you start, you've got to commit, and you're sort of stuck at home and you can't go anywhere. Well, you can, but it's tricky. But we're all set. We've got her big girl undies ready, haven't we, Ruby? And we thought, after we get my audition and Holly's birthday party and Sam's parents' Ruby wedding anniversary out of the way, we'd commit.
Shut up, shut up, shut up. She couldn't stop talking.
Right, said Erica blankly. Normally, she would have had an aggravating counter-opinion.
Ever since Ruby and Holly were babies, Erica had been reading parenting articles relevant to their ages and passing on tips about milestones. Clementine had always believed this was evidence of Erica's obsessive, bordering on strange, interest in Clementine's life, not her interest in having children of her own. How self-obsessed she'd been.
Up! Demanded Ruby as soon as Clementine had finished changing her.
She held out her arms to Erica, and Erica lifted her onto her hip.
Over there!
Ruby thrust her body to one side to indicate which direction Erica should head, as if she were astride a recalcitrant horse.
You're a bossy little thing, said Erica as she took Ruby closer to the bookshelf, where Clementine could see a porcelain doll that Ruby was hoping she could get her hands on.
Oh, that's what you want. I don't think we can let you touch that, said Erica, and she twisted her body away so that Ruby's outstretched hands couldn't grab the doll. Erica's eyes met Clementine's over the top of Ruby's head. There was something a little unfocused and strange about the way she looked at Clementine, but she didn't seem hurt or angry. She mustn't have heard. She wouldn't have just lurked outside the door listening. That wasn't Erica's style. She would have barged right in to hand over the nappy bag, to show up their incompetence, to prove how much better she'd be at this than them. Clementine watched Erica bend her forehead tenderly towards Ruby's, and she felt choked with guilt for her lack of generosity. But she still couldn't. She wouldn't do what her friend had asked.
I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it.
She bent down to put the change mat back in the nappy bag, and she realized it wasn't Erica she was mentally addressing, but her mother.
I've been kind, I've been good, but that's enough now. Don't make me do this, too.
Chapter 27.
Oliver, said Erica quietly, just in case he was still asleep. She stood at the end of their bed, looking at him. One arm was outside the covers, bent at an attractive angle to show his very excellent triceps. He was lean, verging on skinny, but well-built. Early in their relationship, they'd gone to the beach with Clementine and Sam and Holly, who was a baby at the time, and Clementine had whispered in Erica's ear, "Your new boyfriend is unexpectedly buff, isn't he?" It had pleased Erica more than she liked to admit. Oliver rolled over onto his back and opened his eyes. "I'm ready to go over to Mum's place," she said. Oliver yawned, rubbed his eyes, and retrieved his glasses from the bedside table. He glanced out the window at the pouring rain. "Maybe you should wait till the deluge eases." "I'd be waiting all day," said Erica. She looked at her bed, made up with snowy white, crisp bed linen. Oliver made the bed each day with taut hospital corners. She was surprised by how badly she wanted to take off her clothes and get back into bed with him and just forget everything. She wasn't normally a napper. "How are you feeling?" she said. "I think I might be feeling better," said Oliver worriedly. He sat upright in bed and tapped under his eyes, checking his sinuses. "Oh no, I feel good. I should have gone into work." Whenever he took a sick day, the poor man obsessively monitored his health the whole time, in case he was misusing his sick leave entitlements.
"Or I could help you at your mother's place." He sat up and swung his feet onto the floor. "I could change it to a day of personal time."
"You need one more day of rest," said Erica, "and you're not going near my mother's place when you're sick."
"Actually, I do feel a bit dizzy," said Oliver with relief. "Yes, I am now experiencing indisputable dizziness. I could not run the audit clearance meeting. No way."
"You could not run the audit clearance meeting. Lie back down. I'll make you some tea and toast before I go."
"You're wonderful," he said.
He was always so pathetically grateful for any nurturing he got when he was sick. He had been making his own doctor's appointments by the time he was 10. No wonder he was a hypochondriac. Not that Erica had gotten much nurturing from having a nurse for a mother, certainly not for sniffles. No warm chicken soup on a tray like Clementine got from Pam. Although the few times in her life that Erica had gotten properly sick, her mother had nursed her, and nursed her extremely well, as if she'd finally gotten interesting.
"Did I hear you talking to someone on the phone before?" said Oliver, as she was about to leave the room.
"Clementine," said Erica. She hesitated. She didn't want to tell him she'd said yes. She didn't want to see him sit bolt upright in bed, the colour back in his cheeks. Oliver didn't open his eyes.
"Any news?"
"No," said Erica. "Not yet." She just needed to think about it. Today she had that emergency session with her psychologist. Maybe that would get things clearer in her mind. So much to cover at today's session. She might need to bring along an agenda. That wouldn't make her look like a type A personality at all. Not that Erica had a problem with being type A. Why would you want to be any other personality type? As she made Oliver's tea and toast, she thought about the first time their doctor had said it was time to give up on Erica's eggs. "We can pay someone to donate to us, right?" Erica had said. She didn't care. She was almost relieved because she could forget now about her secret fear of passing on her various genetic stains.
There had never been any particular pleasure for her in imagining a child with her own eyes or hair or personality traits. Who would want her thin, lifeless hair? Her skinny, knock-kneed legs? And what if the child hoarded? It was fine that the child would not be biologically hers. She was ready to move on almost instantly. It was Oliver who had seemed to genuinely grieve. It was odd. Touching, but baffling. She knew he loved her. It was one of the most wonderful surprises of her life, but to actually want a child who looked like Erica, who behaved like Erica, who shared her physical and mental attributes? Come on now. That was going a step too far. Anyway, they had money. They could pay for someone's eggs. They would get this job done, finally, once and for all. But apparently not. Well, no, said their doctor. That's illegal here. Their doctor was American. You're allowed to pay your donor for her time and medical costs, but that's it. It's not like back home, where young college students donate their eggs for money. So, Australia does have a real shortage of egg donors. She looked at them sadly, resignedly. She'd obviously given this spiel so many times before. What you're looking for is an altruistic donor. There are women who are prepared to donate to strangers, but they're difficult to find. The easiest, least complicated option, which I would suggest you consider first, is finding a good friend or a relative to help you. Oh, that's fine. We wouldn't want a stranger's eggs anyway, said Oliver immediately. And Erica thought, wouldn't we? Why not? We don't want to just build a baby from spare parts, he said. The doctor's face went blank and professional as she listened to Oliver. After all, that was her trade, building babies. We want this child to come from a place of love, Oliver said with a tremble of emotion, and Erica blushed. She literally blushed, because what in the world was he going on about? She had no problem talking about ovulation and menstrual cycles and follicles in front of her IVF doctor, but not love. That was so personal. Oliver was the one who had suggested Clementine, in the car on the way home, and Erica had instantly, instinctively balked. No. No way. Clementine didn't like needles. Clementine was so busy trying to balance her family and career. Erica didn't like to ask Clementine for favours. She preferred doing favours for Clementine. Then she thought of Holly and Ruby, and suddenly she'd been overwhelmed by the most extraordinary desire. Her own Holly or Ruby. Suddenly this abstract idea she'd been working toward for so long became real. Ruby's beautiful blue cat's eyes with Oliver's dark hair. Holly's rosebud lips with Oliver's nose. For the first time since she'd begun the IVF process, she felt true desperation for a baby. For that baby. She wanted it as much as Oliver did. It almost seemed like she wanted Clementine's baby far more than she'd ever wanted her own baby. The kettle boiled, and she remembered how she had walked down that bouncy, soft-carpeted hallway at Tiffany and Vid's house, encased in that strange bubble where nothing seemed quite real, except that she'd overheard Clementine's voice perfectly. It's almost repulsive to me. Oh, God, I don't mean that. I just really don't want to do it. Why did she remember that part of the night so clearly? It would be better if Clementine's words had vanished from her memory. But her memory of that part of the afternoon was crystalline, more distinct even than a regular memory, as if the tablet
and the first glass of champagne had produced a chemical reaction that had at first heightened her memory before turning it murky. She heard Clementine say, "What if it looked like Holly or Ruby?" Even after all these weeks, her cheeks burned at the memory. Clementine had spoken Erica's secret, most precious hopes out loud in a tone of disdain. She remembered walking into that room and seeing Clementine's horrified face. She was so clearly terrified that Erica had overheard. She remembered how she'd carried Ruby downstairs on her hip while rage and pain raced like bacteria through her bloodstream. Rage and pain for Oliver, who had so blissfully, innocently assumed that if they asked Clementine to donate her eggs, his little baby would come from a place of love. A place of love. What a joke. They'd gone out into that preposterous backyard, and Tiffany had offered her wine, that very good wine, and she'd drunk it faster than she'd ever drunk a glass of wine before, and every time Erica had looked at Clementine, laughing, chatting, having the time of her life, she had silently screamed, "You can keep your damned eggs." And it was at that point that her memories of exactly what happened that afternoon began to loosen, fragment, and crumble. Chapter 28. The Day of the Barbecue.
"This is some backyard," said Sam.
"It's amazing," said Clementine. Vid and Tiffany's house had been impressive, especially the artwork, but this lavishly landscaped backyard, with its tinkling water features, its fountains and urns, its white marble statues, and its scented, candlelit, luxuriously fitted out cabana, was another level of extravagance altogether. The fragrance of roasting meat filled the air, and Clementine wanted to laugh out loud with delight, like a child walking into Disneyland. She was enchanted by the opulence of it all. There was something so hedonistic and generous about it, especially after poor Erica's rigidly minimalist home. Of course, she understood the reasons for Erica's obsession with minimalism. She wasn't completely insensitive. "Yeah, the backyard is all Vid's. He goes for the understated look," said Tiffany, as she indicated a seat for Clementine, refilled her glass with champagne, and offered the plate of Vid's freshly baked strudels. Clementine wondered if Tiffany had some experience in the hospitality field. She almost had one arm folded behind her back as she bent at the waist and poured drinks. From where Clementine sat in the long, low cabana, she could see her daughters playing on a large rectangle of grass next to a gazebo with ornate columns and a wrought iron dome. They were throwing a tennis ball for the little dog. Ruby had the ball at the moment, and she was holding it up high above her head while the dog, taut and trembling with anticipation, sat in front of her, poised to spring. "You must tell Dakota to let us know when she gets sick of looking after the girls," said Clementine to Tiffany, although she hoped it wouldn't be any time soon. "She's having a great time with them," said Tiffany. "You just relax and enjoy the view of the Trevi Fountain there." She nodded at the largest, most extravagant fountain, a monolithic creation built like a wedding cake with winged angels holding uplifted hands as if to sing, except instead they spurted great crisscrossing arcs of water from their mouths. "That's what my sisters call it. Her sisters have the wrong country," said Vid. "The Gardens of Versailles was my inspiration. In France, you know. I got books, pictures, I studied up. This is all my own design. You know, I sketched it out. The gazebo, the fountain, everything. Then I got friends in to build it all for me. I know a lot of tradies. But her sisters, he pointed his thumb at Tiffany, when they saw this backyard, they laughed and laughed. They just about wet their pants. He shrugged, unbothered. I said to them, it's no problem that my art has given you joy. I think it's incredible, said Clementine. No pool? Asked Sam, who had grown up splashing about in a backyard above-ground pool with his brothers and sister. You've got enough room for one. He looked about the backyard as if planning a redesign, and Clementine could tell exactly where his mind was heading. Sometimes he talked wistfully about selling up and moving out to a good old-fashioned quarter-acre block in the suburbs, where there would be room for a pool and a trampoline, a cubby house and a chook shed and a vegetable garden, a house where his children could have the sort of childhood he'd had, even though nobody had childhoods like that anymore, and even though Sam was more urban than her and loved being able to walk to restaurants and bars and catch the ferry into the city. Clementine shuddered at the thought of the third child in that suburban dream of his. Now at the front of his mind, thanks to Erica's request. God, there might even be a fourth child romping about in his imaginary backyard. No pool. I'm not a fan of chlorine. Unnatural, said Vid, as if there were anything natural about all this glossy marble and concrete. It's incredible, said Clementine again, in case Sam's comment would be interpreted as criticism. Is that a maze over there in the corner? For lovers' trysts? She didn't know why she'd said lovers' trysts. What a thing to say. Had she ever said the word tryst out loud in her life before? Was that even how you pronounced it? Yes, and for Easter egg hunts with all of Dakota's cousins, said Tiffany. Taking care of that topiary must take up a bit of your time, commented Oliver, looking at the sculptured hedges. I have a good friend. You know, he takes care of it. Vid made giant snip-snip movements with his hands to indicate someone else doing his hedge clipping. The late afternoon sun streamed into the cabana and created a rainbow effect in the mist of water billowing from the wonderfully absurd fountain. Clementine felt a sudden burst of optimism. Surely Erica hadn't overheard what she'd said, and even if she had, Clementine would make it right, as she had so many times before. And then she'd find a nice, gentle way to explain why she couldn't donate her eggs. An anonymous egg donor would be more suitable for all concerned. They existed, didn't they? People were always getting pregnant using donated eggs. Or celebrities were, anyway. And Sam didn't really want another baby any more than he really wanted to be a tradesman, like his dad. He sometimes said he should have done something with his hands. After a frustrating day at work, he'd go on about how he wasn't really cut out for the corporate world, but then, next thing, he was all excited about a TV commercial he was shooting. Everyone had another sort of life up their sleeve that might have made them happy. Yes, Sam could have been a plumber married to a stay-at-home domestically-minded wife who kept the house in perfect order, with five strapping, football-playing sons, but then he probably would have dreamed of having a fun office job and living in a cool, funky suburb by the harbour with a cellist and two gorgeous little girls. Thank you very much. She took a bite of Vid's strudel. Sam, who was already halfway through eating one, laughed at her. I knew your eyes would roll back into your head when you tasted that. It's spectacular, said Clementine. Yeah, not bad, eh?
said Vid. Tell me. Do taste a little hint of something. Like the idea of a flavor, you know? The dream of a flavor. And you just can't quite put your finger on it?
It's sage, said Clementine.
It is sage, cried Vid.
My wife is so sage, said Sam.
Tiffany chuckled, and Clementine saw the pleasure on her husband's face that he'd made the hot chick laugh. She said, don't encourage the bad dad humor, Tiffany.
Sorry.
Tiffany grinned at her. Clementine smiled back and found her eyes drawn irresistibly to Tiffany's cleavage. It was like something from a Wonder Bra ad. Were those breasts real? Tiffany could probably afford the best. Clementine's friend Emmeline would know. Emmeline had perfect pitch and an unerring eye for a fake boob. That glorious cleavage had to be as unnatural as this backyard. Tiffany adjusted her t-shirt. Oh, God, she'd been staring for too long now. Clementine looked away fast and back at the children.
This strudel is very good, said Oliver in his careful, polite way, wiping a fragment of pastry off the side of his mouth.
Yes, it's excellent, said Erica.
Clementine turned her head. Erica had slurred the word excellent, just a little. In fact, if it were anyone else, Clementine wouldn't have used the word slur, but Erica had a very precise way of speaking. Each vowel was always enunciated just so. Was Erica a little tipsy? If so, it would be a first. She'd always hated the idea of losing control. So did Oliver. Presumably that was part of the reason why they were attracted to each other.
So, now you've passed that test, said Vid. I've got another one.
I'll win this one, said Sam. Bring it on. Sporting trivia, limbo. I'm great at limbo.
He is surprisingly good at limbo, said Clementine.
Oh, me too, said Tiffany. Or I used to be. I'm not as flexible as I once was.
She put down her drink, bent her body back at an extraordinary angle so that her t-shirt rode up and thrust out her pelvis. Was that a tattoo just below the waistband of her jeans? Clementine strained to see. Tiffany took a couple of steps forward and hummed limbo music as she ducked under an invisible pole. She straightened and pressed her hand to her lower back.
Ow! Getting old.
Geez, said Sam a little hoarsely. You might give me a run for my money.
Clementine stifled a giggle.
Yes, my darling, I think she would give you a run for your money.
Where are the kids? He asked suddenly, as if coming back to reality.
They're right there, said Clementine.
She pointed at the gazebo where Dakota and the girls were still playing with the dog. I'm watching them.
Do you do yoga? Oliver asked Tiffany. You've got great flexibility.
Great flexibility, agreed Sam.
Clementine reached over and discreetly pinched the flesh above his knee as hard as she could.
Aye!
Sam grabbed her hand to stop her.
What's that, mate? Asked Oliver.
Bah! It's not a limbo competition, said Vid. It's a music competition. It's my favourite piece of classical music. Now, look, I will be honest with you. I don't know anything about classical music. I know nothing. I'm an electrician, a simple electrician. What would I know about classical music? I come from peasant stock. My family. We were peasants, simple peasants.
Here we go with the simple peasants. Tiffany rolled her eyes.
But I like classical music.
continued Vid, ignoring her. I like it. I buy CDs all the time. Don't know what I'm buying, just pick them at random off the shelf. Nobody else buys CDs anymore, I know, but I do. And I got this one day at the shopping center, you know, and on the way home, I played it in the car. And when this came on, I had to pull over. I had to stop on the side of the road because it was like I was drowning. I was drowning in feeling. I cried, you know? I cried like a baby. He pointed at Clementine. I bet the cellist knows what I mean. Sure, said Clementine. So, let's see if you can name it, eh? Maybe it's not even good music. What do I know? He fiddled with his phone. Naturally, the cabana had a built-in sound system that was linked to his mobile phone. Who says only the cellist can enter this competition? Says Sam. Clementine could hear him imitating Vid's speech cadences without realizing he was doing it. It was so embarrassing the way he did that, picking up waiters' accents in restaurants and coming over all Indian or Chinese. What about the marketing manager, eh? What about the accountant? Oliver followed the joke with heavy-handed jolliness. Erica said nothing. She sat with her forearms perfectly still on the armrests of her chair, staring off into the distance. It was unusual, too, for Erica to disengage from a conversation like this. Normally, she listened to social chit-chat as if she'd be sitting for a quiz later. You can all enter, cried Vid. Silence! He lifted his phone as though it were a conductor's baton and then dropped it in a dramatic, swooping motion. Nothing happened. He swore, jabbing at the screen. Give it here. Tiffany took the phone and pressed some keys. Immediately, the lush opening notes of Jorge's After a Dream cascaded through the cabana with perfect clarity. Clementine straightened. It almost felt like a trick that out of all the pieces of music he could have picked, he'd chosen this one. She knew exactly what he meant when he described drowning in feeling. She'd felt it too when she was 15, sitting with her bored parents. Her father's head kept snapping forward as he dropped off to sleep at the opera house. That extraordinary feeling of submersion, as if she'd been drenched in something exquisite. Louder, cried Vid. It needs to be loud. Tiffany turned up the volume. Next to her, Sam automatically adjusted his posture and assumed his stoic, polite, I'm listening to classical music and hoping it will be over soon face. Tiffany refilled glasses with no discernible reaction to the music, while Erica continued to stare into the distance and Oliver wrinkled his brow, concentrating. Oliver could possibly name the composer. He was one of those well-educated private school boys who knew a lot about a lot of things. But he couldn't feel the music. Clementine and Vid were the only ones feeling it. Vid met her eyes, lifted his glass in a secret salute, and winked, as if to say, "Yeah, I know." Chapter 29. Vid sat at the wrought iron table on his front veranda, with sheets of newspaper laid out, polishing Dakota's school shoes, so that she would look smart for the information morning at St. Anastasia's. He remembered how he used to polish his elder daughter's shoes when they were all at school.
three little pairs of black shoes going down in size. Now, his daughters all wobbled about on stilettos with pointy heels. Something was making him feel especially mournful today, and he was not exactly sure what it was, and it made him feel angry. Perhaps it was related to the weather. He had heard an interview on the radio about how the lack of sunshine was having a detrimental psychological effect on the people of Sydney. Serotonin levels were dipping, causing depression rates to rise. An Englishman had rung up and said, "What a load of rubbish! This is nothing. You Aussies are so soft. Come to England and we'll show you rain." Vid didn't think he was so soft that he'd let a little bad weather worry him. There was the sound of a car in the cul-de-sac, and Vid looked up to see Erika from next door driving off down the street in her blue Statesman. He wondered if Erika had seen Clementine lately. He dipped the brush in the black polish and swirled it around. He had not told one single person that he had seen Clementine perform the other night, as if it were a secret, when there was no reason for it to be a secret. Yes, possibly it was a little strange that he had gone to see her perform, but come on now, why was it so strange? It was a free country. Anyone could go see her perform. "Isn't that right, Barney?" he said to the dog, which sat at his feet, very upright and alert, as if guarding him from something. "It's a free country." Barney shot him a concerned look, and then suddenly trotted off, as if a decision had been reached that nothing could be done with Vid, and he might as well go and check in with some other members of the family. Vid carefully polished the side of the shoe. Women could not polish shoes. They were too impatient and quick. They never did a good job of it. Could Clementine polish a shoe? He wished he could ask her. He would like to hear her answer. Clementine was still their friend, surely. Why would she not return his calls? He only wanted to say hello, to check in with her. He had even left messages, and he didn't like leaving messages. He preferred people to see there was a missed call from him and call straight back. She must have had his number programmed into her phone by now, surely. It was hurtful to him. He'd never had anyone not return his calls before. Even his ex-wife returned his calls. He held the shoe up and examined it, remembering the music. It had been extraordinary, breathtaking. It had been a spur-of-the-moment decision. He was at the quay. He'd been going to meet a good friend at the opera bar, but his friend's elderly mother had got sick and he'd had to cancel at the last minute. So Vid had wandered up into the opera house, where he'd had a very nice, long discussion with a girl at the ticket counter. He'd said he wanted to go to the symphony, and it turned out that was no problem. There were plenty of seats available to Thus Spake Zarathustra. Vid had no idea what that meant, but the girl said he would recognize some of the music from 2001 A Space Odyssey, and she was right. Of course he did. He had not had his hopes up that Clementine would be playing. He knew she wasn't a full-time employee of the orchestra. She filled in for them when they needed her. She was a subby. He also knew she had an audition coming up for a full-time position that she very much wanted. And he'd confirmed with Erika that the audition hadn't happened yet. So, he knew there was only a very small chance she would be playing,
But then again, he'd always been lucky. He was a very lucky person. Some people had the luck, some people did not. But he had the luck. He'd always had the luck. Except, of course, for what happened at the barbecue. But that was just a deviation in the path of his lucky life. But the other night, he'd been lucky. Because there she was, right there on the stage, wearing a long black dress, chatting with the musician sitting next to her, as calm as if they were waiting for a bus, with that beautiful, gleaming instrument leaning back against her shoulder in the same way a small, tired child does. When he found his seat, he got into conversation with the man sitting next to him who was Croatian. His name was Ezra, and he was there with his wife, and they were both subscribers. Vid was now a subscriber, too. Vid told him he'd never been to the symphony before, but he loved classical music, and he knew that cellist sitting right there. And so he was going to be clapping very loudly for her. And Ezra told him that the audience didn't normally clap in between movements, so maybe to wait until other people clapped first. And Ezra's wife, Ursula, leaned forward and said, "You clap when you want to clap." Vid was going to have Ezra and Ursula over for dinner as soon as he could arrange it. He had Ezra's number in his phone. Good people. Very good people. He'd assumed the symphony would be like a show or a movie where all the lights went out. But the lights stayed on, and so he could see Clementine the whole time. At one point, he even thought she'd looked right at him, but he couldn't be sure. She was clearly the best player in the whole orchestra. Any fool could see that. He was transfixed by the way her hand quivered rapidly on the neck of the cello, by the way her bow moved in tandem with the other musicians' bows, by the way she tilted back her head, exposing her neck. He was transfixed by the whole experience, really. Ezra was right. Nobody clapped when Vid thought they should clap. They coughed. Every time the orchestra stopped playing, there was a little symphony of coughing and throat clearing. It reminded Vid of church. He had to leave at the interval because Tiffany was expecting him, but Ezra and Ursula said that the first half was always the best half, anyway. As he drove home from the city, he could still feel the music as if he'd taken some hallucinogenic drug. He had so much feeling trapped within his chest, he had to take shallow breaths while he waited for it to subside. He wanted to call her, to tell her that she was the best player on that stage by a long shot. But then he kept remembering her face, the last time he'd seen her, in this backyard, and he understood that she didn't want to be reminded of that day. He didn't want to be reminded of it either, but still he longed. Not for her, exactly. He didn't want Clementine, not really, not in a sexual way. But he longed for something, and it felt like she was the only one who could give it to him. A police car was pulling into Harry's driveway as Vid, Tiffany, and Dakota left for the information morning. "Maybe we should stop," said Tiffany. "Face the music. I let my young daughter read The Hunger Games, officer. I didn't notice my neighbor was dead. I may have behaved in despicable ways." Vid put his foot on the accelerator. "What? No!" The Lexus purred forward obediently onto the street. "You've already spoken to the police. You've told them everything you know. There's nothing more to say. They're just finishing their report, you know. Wasting taxpayers' money." I should have taken Harry meals, fretted Tiffany. That's what a good neighbour would have done. Why didn't I ever take him a meal? Is that what you think the police want to ask you? Why didn't you take him meals, you lousy neighbour? You could say, well, officer, I'll tell you why. Because he would have thrown those meals in my face, you know? Like a cream pie. You shouldn't only be nice to nice people, said Tiffany, observing the large homes they were passing. Nice, comfy, double-brick homes with well-maintained lawns beneath towering canopies of trees. Had she become one of those entitled types? A little pleased with herself, too busy to care? Of course you should only be nice to nicer people.
Vid looked at Dakota in the rear vision mirror.
You hear that, Dakota? Don't waste your time on people who are not nice.
Tiffany looked over her shoulder at Dakota, who sat upright and pale in her current school uniform. They'd be dropping her off at school afterwards. Her body pressed right up against the side of the car, as if she were making room for other passengers. Why did you rip up that book, Dakota?
Once Mum took Harry over a quiche, said Dakota, without looking at her mother. I remember. It was a mushroom quiche. Did I? Wait, I did, didn't I? Said Tiffany, thrilled by the memory. It had been after a Christmas party they'd had catered. He said he hated mushrooms.
Vid chuckled. There you go.
It wasn't his fault he didn't like mushrooms, she said. I should have tried again. He was rude about it, though, right? Said Vid.
Harry had been rude about the quiche. He had slammed the door so fast she'd had to jump back to make sure her fingers weren't jammed. Still, she knew that his wife and child had died years ago. He was a sad and lonely old man. She should have tried harder.
Don't you feel bad? She said to Vid. At all?
Vid shrugged his big shoulders. He steered with his fingers barely touching the bottom of the wheel.
I feel sad that he died alone. But, you know, what's done is done. And the man spat at our beautiful Dakota.
He didn't spit at me, said Dakota. He just spat on the ground when he saw me. I made him feel like spitting.
That makes me feel like killing the man, said Vid.
His fingers flexed on the wheel.
He's already very, very dead, said Tiffany.
She thought of the stench that had hit her when Oliver opened the door. She'd known straight away.
I just feel...
You feel regret, said Dakota in a flat voice from the back seat. Tiffany turned again quickly. It was the sort of remark that Dakota used to make all the time, testing her vocabulary, testing out ideas, trying to work out exactly how the world worked.
I do feel regret, said Tiffany, eager to chat, to have one of those conversations she used to have all the time with Dakota, where she was always left amazed and delighted by her daughter's quirky, clever observations. But Dakota just kept staring out the window, her jaw set, almost as if she were angry.
And after a moment, Tiffany gave up and faced the other way. Vid talked for the rest of the drive about a new Japanese restaurant some clients of his had been talking about, which served the best tempura in Sydney, possibly the world, possibly the universe.
Here we are, said Vid as they approached a giant set of iron gates. Look at your new school, Dakota.
Tiffany turned to smile at Dakota. But Dakota had her eyes closed, and she was letting her forehead bump quite hard against the window, as if she'd passed out.
Dakota, said Tiffany sharply.
What?
Dakota opened her eyes.
Look, said Tiffany. She made a gesture at the surroundings. What do you think?
It's nice, said Dakota.
Nice, said Tiffany. Nice.
She looked at the lush green fields, the imposing buildings. There was a massive sports arena in the distance that looked like the freaking Colosseum.
It's like Downton freaking Abbey.
Vid wound down his window a fraction.
Smell that?
What? Tiffany sniffed. Some sort of fertilizer? Damp earth?
The smell of money.
He rubbed his fingertips together. He had the same look of satisfaction as when he walked into an opulent hotel foyer. It was all just fun to him. He had the money. He could afford the best. So he'd buy the best and take pleasure in it. His relationship with money was completely uncomplicated. Tiffany thought of her own high school, a cheerful, graffitied concrete jungle out in the western suburbs. Did the girls here smoke ciggies in the toilets? Maybe they did lines of excellent grade coke in marble bathrooms. Vid parked in a car park, rapidly filling with shimmering luxury cars. Tiffany automatically curled her lip at the sight of all those cars. It was a habit left over from her childhood, when her family had sniffed at wealthy people as if there was something unsavory and immoral about them. She still did it, even though her car was just as luxurious, even though she'd been the one to buy this car, with money she'd freaking well earned. The feeling didn't abate as the parents and their daughters were led into a magnificent hall. The smell of good perfume and cologne filled the air as dads in their suits and ties and mums in effortlessly, casually chic spring outfits, who obviously had older daughters at the school because they all knew one another, traded cozy, chummy, entitled rich people remarks.
How was Japan? Great! How was Aspen?
Well, you know, the children had never been to Athens before, so
snap!
A middle-aged woman with dark curly hair sat down next to Tiffany and pointed at their matching Stella McCartney silk skirts. She was wearing a white cardigan exactly like the one Tiffany had been looking for in Dakota's drawer.
Got mine on sale. The woman leaned forward and put her hand over her mouth. 40% off.
50% off, whispered back Tiffany. An outright lie. She'd paid full price, but life was a competition, and she knew the non-working wives of wealthy men loved to talk about how much they'd saved by bargain shopping for designer clothes. It was their contribution to the household finances.
Damn it!
The woman laughed nicely, which made Tiffany wish she'd told the truth. I'm Lisa, she said. Are you new to the school?
My stepdaughters went here, said Tiffany, thinking that her stepdaughters would rather die than be described as her stepdaughters.
They, as was their right, had many years ago decided the best way to show loyalty to their mother was by doing their level best to pretend that Tiffany didn't really exist. They tended to give a little start when she spoke, as if the pot plant had tried to join in the conversation. They loved Dakota, though, so that was all that mattered. My two older daughters are here at the school, said Lisa. Kara is our baby. Lisa gestured to a little girl sitting next to her, swinging her legs and chewing gum.
Oh, God, Kara, I told you to throw that out before we came in. How embarrassing.
And my husband, Andrew. The husband leaned forward to give a little wave. He was in his late 50s with lots of grey hair. He'd be proud of his hair, like Vid was of his, and that distinguished, statesmanlike confidence that comes with professional success in a career like medicine or law. He had distinctive pale hazel eyes with dark rings around the irises.
Tiffany's heart lurched, as if she tripped in a dream.
"Hi, Andrew," said Tiffany.
Chapter 30. The Day of the Barbecue.
"So, our stomachs are full," said Vid, patting his.
Tiffany knew he meant, "My stomach is full, so I need a cigarette," like people once did in the civilized world.
"Anyone for seconds?" asked Tiffany.
"Or thirds?"
She scanned the long table as people pushed away their plates with satisfied sighs and complimentary murmurs.
Vid, at the head of the table, leaned back in his chair and tapped his fingers on his armrests, like a king benevolently regarding his loyal subjects. Except that in this case, the king had cooked dinner and his subjects had praised him big time. The tenderness of the meat and so on and so forth. Clementine, in particular, had laid it on thick.
Vid and Clementine were getting on like a house on fire. Earlier, they'd spoken for 10 minutes straight about caramelized onions. Tiffany had got her own back by talking to Clementine's husband about the footy.
"You're really into your sport, aren't you, Tiffany?" said Sam now. "You're not just faking it, to be polite."
"Oh, I never fake it," said Tiffany.
"Why would she?" said Vid. He lifted his hands as if to indicate his marvellous physique. Everyone laughed, except for Oliver and Erica, who gave pained smiles. Tiffany decided she'd better try to curb the risque jokes as she saw her neighbours give pointed looks at the children, who were out of earshot anyway. Dakota had the two little girls on either side of her in the hanging egg chair in the back corner of the cabana, and she was showing them something on her iPad. The girls were happily snuggled up to Dakota's sides, like the dream little sisters she'd never have. A deal was a deal, but how could you not have a pang of regret watching that? And were enthralled by whatever Dakota was showing them. Hopefully it didn't involve people's heads exploding. Barney was over in a far corner of the backyard, contentedly involved with some sort of illicit hole-digging operation, which Tiffany was pretending not to notice. Every now and then, he'd look over his shoulder to make sure he wasn't about to be caught.
"Poor Oliver pretends to be interested in sport whenever we're around," said Clementine. "Sam says, 'Did you catch the game last night?' And you can see Oliver thinking, 'What game?'"
"I don't mind watching a bit of the tennis," said Oliver.
"Oliver plays sports," said Sam. "That's the difference between him and me. I get my heart rate up yelling at the screen."
"Oliver and Erica actually met on the squash court," said Clementine. "They're very athletic people."
There was something a bit overeager about the way Clementine spoke, as if she felt the need to champion the couple, like she was their newly appointed publicist.
"Were you playing against each other?"
asked Tiffany as she refilled Erica's wine glass yet again. Tiffany wouldn't have picked her to be a heavy drinker, not that it was her business. Anyway, it wasn't like Erica had to drive home. She only had to walk next door.
"We worked for the same accounting firm," said Erica. "Some of the staff started a squash comp on Thursday nights. Oliver and I volunteered to do the draw."
"We have a shared love of spreadsheets," said Oliver. And he smiled at Erica as if over some secret memory involving spreadsheets.
"I love a good spreadsheet myself," said Tiffany.
"Do you?" Clementine spun her head. "What do you use spreadsheets for?"
There was just the faintest emphasis on the word "you." "For my work," said Tiffany, with just the faintest emphasis on the word "work."
"Oh," said Clementine, "I didn't..."
What do you do?
I buy unrenovated properties, fix them up, sell them, said Tiffany.
You flip them, said Sam.
Yep, said Tiffany, I flip them, like pancakes.
She doesn't just flip, said Vid. She's a big-time property developer.
I'm not, said Tiffany. I've only just gone a bit bigger. I'm doing a small apartment block. 6 two-bedroom apartments.
Yep, she's like Donald Trump. My wife earns the big bucks. You think this big motherfucking house, excuse my French, comes from my money? You think all that artwork inside, all those masterpieces, comes from my money?
Oh, God, Vid. Next he was going to say, I'm just a simple electrician.
I'm just a simple electrician, said Vid. I married up.
A simple electrician with 30 employees, thought Tiffany. But go for your life, Vid. I'll take full credit for our money. They're not masterpieces, by the way, said Tiffany. So how did you two meet? Asked Oliver in his courteous, proper way. He reminded Tiffany of a priest making conversation with his parishioners after Sunday Mass. We met at a property auction, said Tiffany, before Vid got a chance to answer. It was a studio apartment in the city. My first ever investment.
Ah, but that wasn't the first time I met her, said Vid, with the anticipatory tone of someone sharing his favourite dirty joke. Vid, warned Tiffany. She met his eyes across the table. Jesus, he was hopeless. It was because he liked Clementine and Sam, and whenever he really liked people, he felt compelled to share the story. He was like a big kid, desperate to show off to his new friends by saying the naughtiest word he knew. If it were just the neighbours there, he would never have said it. Vid looked back at Tiffany, disappointed. He gave a little shrug and lifted his hands in defeat.
But maybe that's a story for another day.
This is all very mysterious, said Clementine. So, were you bidding against each other at the auction? Asked Sam.
I stopped bidding, said Vid, when I saw how badly she wanted it.
A lie, said Tiffany. I outbid him fair and square.
She'd made $200,000 on that place.